We'll convene the House Committee on Education. Good afternoon, everybody. Nice to have you here. And we will be moving into a public hearing in just a moment. Representative Reardon is here for about four bills today, so we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2528. And Alethea, if you would tell us what that bill is about.
Yeah, thank you, Vice Chair Wilson. Members of the committee, House Bill 2528 appropriates money from the general fund to the Oregon Department of Education for training and professional development of school district personnel on the contents and implementation of the comprehensive guidance and counseling framework, which is adopted by the Department of Education. This measure takes effect on July 1st, 2017. It was previously heard on July 8th, 2017. There is a Dash 1 amendment which appropriates $240,000 out of the general fund, and there's a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means. A fiscal impact statement has been issued, and a revenue impact statement has been issued with no revenue impact.
Thank you. Would you repeat again when the bill was first heard?
February 8th, 2017.
Okay, thank you. Representative, welcome. And if you would state your name for the record, we'll take off.
I will. My name is Jeff Reardon, State Representative for District 48, which includes parts of Southeast Portland, Happy Valley, and the Clackamas area. And thank you for the opportunity to allow me the chance to kind of refresh your memory on these four bills. They're all related to assisting school counselors and providing them with the support they desperately need. If you may recall, Oregon ranks 43rd in the nation for the highest student-to-school counselor ratio. So we're leading, not quite leading, but close. Oregon averages about 604 students to every one school counselor. The number should be closer to about 250 to one. So I've got four bills to share with you. And you asked, I guess we're just opening one at a time. Is that correct, sir?
Correct.
Okay. So House Bill 2528, this bill would appropriate money to the Oregon Department of Education to provide training and professional development to school district personnel for the content and implementation of a new comprehensive guidance and counseling framework. So they've come up with a new approach to counseling. They need to train folks on how to use that new framework. And this bill is meant to be paired with House Bill 2536, which I'll talk about in just a little bit. All four of these bills, make a really good package to help improve our counseling system. This one does have the fiscal. You raised questions about that my last time I was here. And somebody suggested a way we can piggyback this on other programs. I have not yet found a source of funding for this, still have an issue in that regard. That's all I have at this time on this bill.
Thank you. Do we have any questions for Representative Reardon? All right. Do we have anybody else who has signed up to testify on this? Wait one, please. Okay, we do. Representative, thank you. Apparently, we have no one who wants to ask you a question, and so we'll have you stand by for a moment. We'll get to your other bills here very shortly. Okay. Beth Wiggum, please.
Well, we were just signed in mistakenly. We don't need to testify.
All right, sounds good. Okay, we were going to go ahead and close the public hearing for now. We'll probably work this later as soon as Chair Doherty returns. So I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2528, and I'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2529. Representative Reardon, if you'd go through the routine again, please.
Okay. Thank you very much. House Bill 2529 intended to create support for the school counselors, especially in those schools where the counselors might have significant overwhelming caseload. So I mentioned the caseload numbers before. And this bill requires that people who apply for a preliminary administrative license or just training up to become that building principal required to take a little coursework regarding comprehensive school guidance and counseling programs and how they work together. So it's helping build that community that will be there to help the kids. I mentioned in my last testimony that counseling students is not an isolated function, but they really need to work well together, and this training would help the principal in that regard. So if I can stop right there.
Okay, thank you. Go quickly.
So,
sure. Any questions for the representative? Representative Evans.
Yes, Representative Verdon, I like the idea of the bill. I'm supportive, but I have a question regarding OSBA or COSA's stand on extra education and extra content required, and if they had any opposition to that.
I have heard no opposition to this bill.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions? I might ask staff, you know, I wanted to look and see if OSBA or COSA, anyone had had anything to say about this bill. Are we aware of any previous testimony on that? Okay, apparently.
There's OSBA is present, and I don't see Morgan Allen, but they might be able to testify quickly.
Richard, would you mind coming forward?
I think you went to Morgan.
Oh, look who just walked in.
Morgan Allen from COSA.
Yeah. And Morgan, if we could have you come up too, please. Well, welcome to committee, by the way.
Vice Chair Wilson, members of the committee, Richard Donovan on behalf of the Oregon School Boards Association, happy to answer your questions.
Thank you. Once again, we're talking House Bill 2529 right now. Requires applicants for preliminary administrative license to complete coursework related to comprehensive school guidance and counseling programs. Any thought?
My colleague from the administrators, do you want to?
We have, Chair Wilson, members of the committee, we have not received any negative feedback from our members about this, but we also have not talked in great detail about all of the various counselor bills yet.
So. Okay, thank you, Morgan. If you'd identify yourself.
Oh, excuse me. Morgan Allen here on behalf of COSA.
Thank you. All right, Richard, back to you.
Vice Chair Wilson, members of the committee, the school boards are, as you can imagine, generally in favor of student supports. Guidance counselors represent that sort of student support, and you know, having good credentialed guidance counselors and student supports is of high value. We have not discussed this bill at length. The limited feedback we've had has been something along the lines of, this would be great. We the value of counselors in school is tremendous, but how do I staunch the bleeding in all my other areas in the state school fund at this current level, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Thank you.
Chair Wilson, I would just add, since I was had not had a lot of discussion, I'd be happy within the next day or two to provide feedback to the committee as well. Get some official something in writing for you.
Thank you. Representative Evans.
Thank you, Vice Chair Wilson. For representatives of OSBA and COSA, if you could ask the Eastern Promise and Western Promise their view of the extra content danger involved in this, I'd appreciate it. Because, again, I want to make sure that extra content isn't seen as too much of a problem for them.
Vice Chair Wilson, Representative Evans will be happy.
Thank you. Further questions? All right. Thank you.
We'll close. Chair Wilson, if I may.
Yes.
I have not seen a fiscal on this. I believe it might be just a very modest one. This is something that just puts a requirement on that student to take a class. And so I think the fiscal is very modest, and please let me know if I'm in error on that.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2529. Once again, our idea is, and I'm speaking for the chair, and I probably shouldn't, but I think we'll be back to work these a little later on today, as soon as she comes back in. Let's open a public hearing on House Bill 2530. Representative Reardon.
Chair Wilson, this...
Let Alethea, excuse me, we'll have her talk about this for a moment.
Yeah. Chair Wilson, members of the committee, House Bill 2530 requires that each school district ensure its students have access to guidance counselors who are licensed by the Teacher Standards Practices Commission, or ensure that students have access to licensed counselors. It was previously heard on February 8th, 2017, has a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means. There is a Dash 1 amendment which changes the requirement that districts have access to guidance counselors licensed by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission or qualified to be a licensed school counselor. Now, this allows those qualified to provide the services or guidance counselors through education or experience. The revenue impact statement has been issued as no impact.
All right, thank you, Representative.
Well, Rep. Wilson, I need to beg your indulgence. Something happened between this morning at 11:30 when Chair Doherty asked me about how well prepared we were, and some issues have come up. There need to be further discussions between those who have an interest in the social work, those who have an interest in the counseling. There was discussion on merging a couple of bills. I need to ask if it's at all possible to carry this bill over. I would be so very grateful for that opportunity to come back and talk out if we've had a chance to work out some of the issues.
Great, thank you. We do have someone who has signed up to testify on this one, and that would be Dan Cushing. Dan here? Dan? Please come forward. State your name for the record, please.
Vice Chair Hernandez, Vice Chair Wilson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dan Cushing. I'm here today representing the National Association of Social Workers Oregon Chapter, a professional association that represents over 1,500 social workers in the state of Oregon. My remarks today may be evolving, as it sounds like we have some more conversations to carry out with this bill, but I do want to say what I came here to say, which is that we have issues with the bill as introduced. Those issues are addressed in the Dash 1 amendments, so provided that the Dash 1 amendments are adopted, we would be supportive of the bill. This bill, as stated, requires that every student has access to a school counselor. The problem that we see with this is that in cases where there's only enough resources to hire one student support specialist, that this bill would say that that specialist has to be a counselor. And what our priority is that school administrators have the flexibility to make sure that they can hire the team that works best for their students, and that would include specialists like school social workers. So as a little bit of background, school social workers are trained as social workers and go through a specialized track within their master's programs and obtain licensure from the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission, just like school guidance counselors. And we believe that both of these roles, again, should be part of that school-based team that works to improve students' personal, social, emotional, behavioral, and mental health so that teachers can focus on teaching. The services provided by these two specialties overlap in many, many ways, and we definitely support the work that school guidance counselors do. There are also important areas where each position specializes. As we have discussed in this committee several times already this session, we believe that school social workers are uniquely positioned to deal with some of the issues identified by the state, including some of the issues in the 2016 chronic absenteeism report that was commissioned by the Chief Education Office. Again, we're concerned that as introduced, this bill's language would limit the ability of school administrators to make those hiring decisions, and we firmly believe that they should have the flexibility to hire the professionals that best meet the needs of their students, and that's why the Dash 1 amendment is important to us. So in conclusion, I would just urge this committee to consider school social workers as valuable members of that school-based team that supports student success. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Cushing? All right. Thank you very much. Thank Representative Reardon, any final comments on this one?
I just hope that that you will indulge me, have the opportunity to carry this over, and Mr. Cushing could have the opportunity then to come back when we have worked out the details.
Sounds great. All right. Anything from the committee? Okay. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2530. And now we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2536. Alethea, if you describe the bill, please.
Yeah. Vice Chair Wilson, members of the committee, House Bill 2536 directs the Oregon Department of Education to develop professional development courses related to guidance and counseling programs for students in kindergarten through grades 12. It appropriates $250,000 out of the general fund beginning July 1st, 2017, previously heard on February 8th. There is a Dash 1 amendment which removes the appropriation of $250,000 out of the general fund with the subsequent, and this bill is a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means. The revenue impact statement has been issued as no impact, and a fiscal impact statement has been issued, which is available on all lists.
All right, thank you. And Chair Doherty is back, and I'll just let you know we have run through a number of public hearings here, and we are now conducting a public hearing on House Bill 2536, and Representative Reardon is going to continue talking about this one.
Thank you.
Okay, well, now Chair Doherty. So this is House Bill 2536, it's sort of the other leg of House Bill 2528. We talked earlier about this new framework that's coming out. So we're looking for a cost-effective way to educate the counselors and others about this new framework. And so the best way to do that is through the online program. And courses would be made so available electronically, provide all the training material that we get. And the Dash 1 amendment does change the fiscal to an indeterminate amount because it would involve creating an electronic platform for taking the courses. And so I don't know exactly what that amount will be. So that's kind of up in the air at this point. But I think, you know, if we look at all this bill and the other bills, you know, we look at each little piece. Together, you're going to get some very big results in a pretty cost-effective package. And we need to really think collectively and strategic on how we're ensuring the success of every student in our schools. And so I urge the committee's support and passage of these bills. And thank you for the chance to get House Bill 2530 where we need it, hopefully soon.
Yeah, those people. They did. Thank you. Please come on.
Are you signed up?
Is that right?
Well, we have to ask Chair Doherty.
Could I have your permission, Chair Doherty? I just came in late.
As long as you identify yourself for the record, and we'll get you on here. Yes.
Gene Aiken, Oregon State University, and also speaking on behalf of the Oregon School Counselor Association and Oregon Association of School Counselor Educators. So, specifically with respect to the Oregon framework, you're aware that that has the force of law under OAR 581-022-1510 that every school district must have a comprehensive school counseling program utilizing the Oregon framework. And so the as we shared with testimony earlier, Oregon framework was developed in the early 2000s, really has not undergone any major revision since that time. And now under leadership of new personnel at the Oregon Department of Education is in the process of being revised. And in that revision will reflect the kind of best practices in the update of the ASCA national model for school counselors. So then the next challenge becomes after the revision is complete, how do we roll this out so that every school district in the state can benefit from the new Oregon framework? And as Representative Reardon indicated, the most cost-effective way of doing that is online, because the other option, and this was exercised in the mid-2000s, where people were coming into Salem or Portland for training, but that necessitated the cost of lodging, travel, and meals. And so the online option really makes it available for everybody from down in Brookings to Ontario, just across the state, and any size school district. I would also share that I'm familiar with a model that's been used in Indiana, and exemplary model, and I think we would be able to fashion our rollout after that model used in Indiana. The model in Indiana is so well thought of that once a school has completed what's called Gold Star status through the use of that model, then they're automatically eligible to apply for RAMP status, which is the highest status a school counseling program can be awarded through ASCA. And Indiana has more RAMP schools than school counseling programs by far than any other state. And so I think this is a tremendous opportunity to provide this to school counselors across the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? The panel. Representative Wilson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Reardon, I know that the main thrust of this legislation package that we've looked at is to aid in training for those who wish to become school counselors. We've already seen the numbers showing that we don't have near enough school counselors, especially as compared to some other states. Question is this package designed to, and I gather, stop me if I'm wrong, but is this package designed to lead to better trained counselors and more of them, hopefully? And if more of them, how will that work?
Thank you for your question, Rep. Wilson. This is, you know, when I look at this problem of a lack of counselors and the ratios that we have, and try to look at the whole system and come up with something that's, you know, cost-effective and efficient, and it's going to improve what we're doing. And so I think, as Gene mentioned, we have a framework that needs to be, by law, implemented. So how do we do that in a way that's really going to to work cost effectively, and especially in a dire budget situation that we're in right now? So that is the way that I look at it, is how do we build a system? I wish it weren't so. I don't see that we'll be adding a lot of counselors anytime soon. If we can do something about revenue, perhaps we can improve that situation. I would love it, but that's not part of this package. This package is saying, what can we do in the most cost-effective way possible to help strengthen the administrators so they're better prepared to help, provide the training in a cost-effective manner, and I think it's just really, you know, I think it's really well thought out. And I didn't do all the thinking, by the way. I'll tell you that. We had Dr. Akins and a whole team of folks from HEC, from the Department of Education, people that have worked together for the last year or more on bringing this package together. So a lot of labor of love into this, but also I told them last, was over a year ago, whatever you do, it has to be low cost. And I think they took that message to heart. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my questions are really around the content of the bill, so please help me understand, Representative Reardon. So, and the amendment is just to change the dollar amount, right?
Yes.
It doesn't change the content of the bill.
Chair Doherty, Rep. Springer. Yes.
Follow-up?
Yes. So under Section 1, Line 5, develop professional development courses related to guidance and counseling for programs, guidance counseling programs for students in kindergarten through grade 12. So we're talking about higher ed developing the programs for education degrees, correct?
We, Chair Doherty, Rep. Springer, we view this as a comprehensive preschool through higher ed system when we were talking about everything from counseling to career pathways. So that was the context of my comment about why higher ed was involved. So we're trying to get kids, you know, through the entire system.
Mm-hmm. Follow up. Mm-hmm. So, and then it talks about make electronically available the courses developed under Section 1 of this section to all school districts. So somebody in a school district could log on and say, I need some information on X to help my fifth graders do whatever as far as career professional development?
May Chair Doherty, Rep. Springer, may I defer that to Dr. Akins?
So Chair Doherty, Representative Springer, the specificity of the question that you just asked, we would love to be able to provide consultation supervision to school councils around the state and do that electronically. We would need additional funding, small amount of additional funding above and beyond the funding just to roll out the framework. But the framework provides the preparation for school counselors across the state in developing and implementing the career development domain, academic development domain, personal, social, emotional development domain, and being able to provide the requirements of the OAR that I referenced earlier. So Scioto School District, for example, would be able to meet the requirements of that mandate and see that the needs of students K-12 and SIO are being met.
I'm only asking this because of what you just said. Is that a Division 22 requirement?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, 581-022-1510.
Okay. Another follow-up. What I'm trying to get at, I'm all on board this to the point where I've spent tons of hours in schools and at my own dining room table having family dinners with students saying, what do I want to be when I grow up? Which is a great question to be asking. I'm trying to figure out logistically how this works and then how a teacher in the classroom, I'm not talking about the four counselors at Lebanon High School that take care of 1,200 students, or do their best to do that. I'm talking about how the teachers are going to access this and how this augments or why they would do this when they have AVID, when they have different programs already occurring that are hopefully moving kids on a path to at least a career of their choice or higher ed. And I have not mentioned Aspire yet this session. And Aspire is one of those great programs. We get a ton of bang for our bucks. So I'm trying to figure out logistically how this works, that we're not just trying to fulfill a Division 22 requirement, that we're really trying to put together something that educators are going to grab a hold of and use in addition to what they're doing.
So Chair Doherty and Representative Springer, a couple of comments I think I could make in response to your question. First of all, when I was head of the program at Lebanon High School, I started Aspire. And so fully believe in Aspire, also believe in what's happening with AVID across the nation, mm-hmm. and also with Gear Up in smaller communities. So a lot of excellent programs. None of those programs really address personal, social, emotional development. To some degree, they address academic development domain, primarily career development domain, and helping students from families who may not give them the support to really think about and go on for post-high school education. So excellent opportunities. The other thing, though, I would point out, OAR 1510 says K-12, and generally speaking, Aspire, AVID, Gear Up have focused primarily on high school.
True.
And so the Reach Higher Oregon team, and I've been a part of that team, was chair of the team for some time, we believe that career and college development starts K-5, mm-hmm. and starts with social emotional learning. And so elementary school counselors are the people who deliver social emotional learning and really deliver comprehensive career development at the K-5 level. And also I think evidence is showing that if K-5 students don't have that background, they're going to go into middle school already having the belief, which often becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, no, community college simply is not a possibility for me, and they begin to shut down on taking the coursework that would be needed to get them their grade 6, 7, 8.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else to speak on House Bill 2528?
2536.
Oh, or 2536. or whichever. Okay. Seeing none, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2536.
Thank you very much for hearing us.
Thank you. And we're going to start at ease for about 5 minutes.
Sure.
Okay, thank you very much. To do that, but we're no longer at ease. What we're going to be doing is we're going to be working some of the bills, and then we will be carrying one over, and then we will be answering questions from the whatever bill was on House Bill 2848 that we carried over from the other day. So with that, I am going to open a work session on 2528.
Yes.
I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2528, and Alethea, if you just want to go through, and do we need to remind people of what that is?
I think since we just did it, maybe not.
Okay.
Once again, though, if I could ask, the what is the fiscal on that, the estimated fiscal on 2528?
It does not mandate school districts utilize this.
Because with these bills, actually the ones, most of these are going to Ways and Means. We're going to be dealing with the policy part.
So for 2528, and that's with the dash one amendment, the fiscal, it says on the statement, $143,000, a little bit over that for the general fund, and that's for one education specialist, two position at 0.5 FTE. A little over $78,000 general fund for an administrative specialist two position, that's at 0.5 FTE, and $18,000 for additional services and supplies that are associated with training school district staff.
Okay. And that's why there's a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. So we'll deal with the policy. It's nice to know what the fiscal will be, and then Ways and Means, well, joint Ways and Means, will deal with that. Okay. Yes, Representative Springer.
Questions on the bill, right?
Yes. Actually, why don't we go through and we'll officially talk about the dash one amendments and these things, then we'll open it for discussion. So we'll do the formalities and then open it up for discussion. So, Representative Hernandez.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the dash one amendment.
Okay. Rep. Hernandez moves that to adopt the dash one
amendments.
This is on the bill we're talking about.
Yes.
Is there discussion? Do we need to go through and review what those dash one amendments are?
That's just the money.
That's just the money.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So Rep. Hernandez moves the adoption of dash one amendments. Is there discussion? And this is where we had the discussion about the financial part of it. Any discussion, or do you want to discuss the entire bill?
Oh, you're looking at me, aren't you?
I am.
I want to discuss the whole bill.
Okay, so if there's no objection, is there any objection to the dash one amendments? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted. Representative Hernandez?
Chair Doherty, I move HB 2528 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to Committee of Joint Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 2528 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion?
Yes.
Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple specific questions about this, and it's not new. I'm really focused this session on us not tweaking and doing things to education as much as we have in the past. And I think next week or the week after that is my bill that talks about that specifically, so I want to be careful. First of all, this is money allocated to Department of Ed to do something, correct?
Correct.
Will any school district or any school in the state of Oregon be required to participate in this?
And my assumption for that is no, they will not be required. What this is to appropriate money to set up the training and professional development of school district employees on the contents and implementation of the counseling framework, but it's not going to be a requirement.
Follow up?
Yes.
One of the gentlemen that testified talked about this being part of Division 22, and I realize Division 22 requirements are requirements,
right,
for
many
all
of
school
them unfunded,
districts.
Many of them unfunded.
And oftentimes they are waived by a letter from the school board saying we weren't able to do that textbook adoption this year or whatever that Division 22 requirement would be. Would that same process be in place for school districts
regarding the comprehensive guidance and counseling framework.
Okay. I cannot answer that question, and I do not know if...
Well, we can call Reardon back down.
Yeah, we can call Reardon back for that one. So,
follow-up question then?
Yes.
You've got somebody here.
A follow-up question, a question I can't quite answer.
Yeah.
But we'll wait for Representative Reardon to come in.
Follow-up point. Could I do a follow-up point?
You can do a follow-up point.
So we're continuing to be productive while they're in, coming in. I mean, this is great stuff. I don't know anybody on the planet that will say counseling is not a good thing in lots of areas for our students. But this money will come from general fund money that could be put into the state school fund and allocated to the classroom, correct?
Correct. Okay. So thank you very much. We are actually in a session where we are ready to pass it, but we have some questions. And so Representative Springer has a question about whether this will be required for people to, whether it's like an unfunded mandate to schools. So Representative,
thank you.
Your question is?
So clearly, we talked about Division 22 requirements. Oftentimes, those Division 22 requirements are waived because a school board, for whatever reason, can't implement those. I remember one year, school board I was on, we sent a letter saying we can't afford the total textbook adoption that we're on cycle to do. We'll do it next year. And that was waived. Is this going to be any type of a requirement on the school districts to participate in this framework? And if so, is it under Division 22, and is it a requirement that can be waived?
So, Chair Doherty and Representative Springer, there are a lot of the parts of your question that I would not be privy to because it's really a function of Oregon Department of Education. So, I think that basically, you know, my understanding would be that the mandate says every school district shall provide a comprehensive school counseling program, K-12, okay, utilizing the Oregon framework. So I would say that I have seen some school districts. In fact, I was back in the days when we still had standardization teams. I was part of a standardization team that went into the Sweet Home School District to see if they were in compliance with that OAR. They had a couple of small elementary schools there at Hawley, for example, mm-hmm, and Hawley did not have a school counselor. But they had fulfilled the mandate so well with the use of their teachers. And so I do not know why a school district would ask to not have to meet that mandate. You and I well know there are probably many that are not. Mm-hmm. But there should be really no reason why they'd have to ask to not comply unless an extremely, extremely small district, maybe like out in Adrian, where they're not simply not able to find anyone to fulfill. But even then, I think it's possible to fulfill many of the requirements of the OAR.
And we have Beth and Emily up here that could answer from ODE that could possibly say the yes or no or the maybe question.
Okay. Do I need to ask it again?
Emily Nazara with the Oregon Department of Education. Chair Doherty and Representative Springer, I'll speak first to the waiver question, and then Beth will answer what's required of the administrative rule. Mm-hmm. So because the rule is in Division 22, we do have a section in Division 22 that allows districts to request a waiver, and that applies to all the Division 22 regulations. In order to request a waiver, they have to submit to us a request in writing that says which standard they are asking to be excused from for the year. And then that goes before the State Board of Education, needs a recommendation from the Deputy Superintendent. Then it goes to the State Board of Education, and they do a vote on it. I've been at the department 3.5 years, and we've never had a waiver request on the Comprehensive Guidance Counseling Plan. And then Beth can speak a little bit to what's required under the administrative rule.
Sure. For the record, my name is Beth Wiggum with the Oregon Department of Education. I'm the school counselor specialist. Chair Doherty and Representative Springer. Dr. Aiken is correct in that there is the requirement under the OAR. However, in the past, the way that they had done it, set up professional development, was that it was who was willing to participate. So even though it is a mandate that they have a comprehensive guidance and counseling program in districts, it was basically who was able to participate at that time. With this this bill, we're hoping that we're able to reach more school districts and train them in the updated framework. And with that is the opportunity to access more of the school districts and participation.
But the rules have not changed. They can still get the waiver. Mm-hmm.
Right. Brief follow-up question. I think this is brief. I think this requires a brief answer. Mm-hmm. So there already is this requirement. We are looking at giving supports to districts that are choosing to access those supports.
Rep Doherty,
because we already have the framework.
Yes.
Thank you. Okay.
Representative Pierce.
Thank you.
So if I might again, Chair Doherty and Representative Springer, what this bill really does is remove the biggest barrier for school districts across the state, and that's the requirement that they would have to help. You know, I don't think we could, for all 1,100, transport them into a major metropolis area of Salem, Portland, Eugene, whatever, from Burns, for example, and then provide lodging and meals. So this is really, again, the biggest bang for the buck. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Parrish, question?
Yes, I do have a question. So in the fiscal impact piece, the bill is amended, gives $240,000 general fund allocation. Is this a one biennium request, or is this roll up into subsequent biennia? Because that's not in here, and a lot of times when we see a bill that's sort of creating permanent FTE, then we'll sort of see the next biennium, and that'll sort of be carried out. So I'm not seeing that in this fiscal impact, and I'm curious if this is just a one time, we're going to get the framework going, we're going to train some schools, and then we don't need the FTE any longer, or is there a subsequent roll up in a future biennium? I think the work's important. I think Representative Reardon is really, you can see the work that has gone into all of this. But I do have some hesitation. I mean, I'm going to be a yes on the bill and let Ways and Means sort of fight that out for this biennium, but I would like to know that. But I do have some hesitation in sort of consistently growing the executive branch and growing ODE, and we need a half-time specialist for this or that. And so is it a one-time, one biennial request?
Chair Doherty, Representative Parrish, I would have to go back to our fiscal people and ask. Usually when we get an FTE position, it does become a permanent, it rolls up as part of our budget, but I would have to confirm that on this one, and I can do that right after the meeting.
Thanks.
And this was something that definitely would be brought up at the Joint Ways and Means, mm-hmm. as their issue. So, okay. Any other questions? Any other discussion of the issue? Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, I just want to make a statement for the record that I would echo what Representative Parrish said. I'm anxious that we have the resources in our classrooms to address these issues, but I have similar concerns about the fiscal responsibility that we have as legislators to make sure that we've got things covered. And I recognize we're the policy folks, not the Ways and Means folks, but I just wanted to put that on the record.
Okay.
Thank you.
Madam Chair. Thank you very much. Yes,
I want to make a comment, so that it's not just the idea that we might be asking for more FTE, that, you know, can we maintain this at the Department of Ed? But I think when I'm looking at it, it's already been indicated that there are some of these schools that do not have a counselor on board, or there's some of these schools that haven't been able to have whatever we've asked them to do already, and they've asked maybe not for a waiver, but they've tried to take care of it in a different way, which means many times, as you pointed out, that the teacher's been doing just fine doing this job. And so I think, again, every time you ask a teacher to do one more thing, whether with me it was get my van license or get my food handler's license or make sure that, you know, I know how to deal with X, Y, or Z, every time you ask a teacher to do one more thing, that means that they have less time to do the other work they've also been told to do. So it's not just money we're talking about as far as a cumulative effect. It's everything you're asking for that teacher to do in that room. And sometimes people will find, well, we have to have the teachers do it because we just can't afford this. And so it could be a mandate that doesn't have funding accompanying it. So who could be against counseling? Who could be against social development and career development? Nobody. But again, I think we have to look at what the consequences are and also what the conditions are and what we're doing to the system as a whole. And we may think it's supportive, but it may not feel supportive to the teacher that has another job to do. So I just have to say that.
And so, and that's it for so many things. This is a framework that deals hopefully just with counselors and getting them the training and so on that, and upgrading they need. But that is definitely an issue that we've dealt with forever.
Yep.
And one we will deal with down in a couple of weeks.
Yes, ma'am.
Springer. Okay. Any other discussion on this House bill? Okay, seeing none, will the clerk read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Aye.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Passes, and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means. Okay, with that, I close the works. Mm-hmm. I will close the work session on House Bill 2528 and open up a work session on House Bill 2529. If you want to refresh us again as to what this bill is.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2529 requires that applicants submitting for a preliminary administrative license by the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission complete coursework that provides an overview of state requirements for comprehensive school guidance and counseling programs. It requires the operative date be January 1st, 2019, but allows the TSPC to take any action prior to this. Previously heard on February 8, 2017, there's no subsequent referrals, and the fiscal impact statement is minimal. The revenue impact statement is no impact.
Okay. Hernandez.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 2529 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 2529 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Evans.
Chair Doherty, thank you very much. I'm for this bill. I think it's important, especially given the kinds of challenges that are going on in schools. But I'm going to use this opportunity to emphasize that I assume added training would actually be delivered in the form of academic content above a bachelor's level. And I'd like to again send a message to the High Desert ESD, Eastern Oregon University, and Willamette ESD that higher education in the form of academic content to actually do the job isn't a danger. Yeah. Thank you.
Well, and this is for an administrative license, so it's a little bit different. So, anyway, any other question? Representative Springer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not going to be able to support this because it does require new and stiffer requirements
for administrative license. Mm-hmm. Okay. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. And I'm going to echo that. I too, am going to be a no on this. If we're really going to be flexible with school districts having kind of local control and giving them flexibility, that should also include who they're going to choose as a school superintendent. And so I have always opposed sort of the administrative license at the school super level that we currently have. And so to add more to that, there might not be a fiscal impact for us as the state, but that fiscal impact where that does show up is if a school district has professional development that they pay for college tuition, that does take money from the classroom. So I appreciate the thought behind it and really just want to get to a bill where we say we put more school counselors in the mix. But I don't think that at the administrative level, given my personal belief on administrative licenses, that I can support this.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, seeing none. Matt, would you read the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
No.
Representative Parrish.
No.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
No.
Representative Vile.
No.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
No.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion fails. Okay, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 2529 and open up a work session on House Bill 2530.
Mm-hmm. We're going to, and then you ask the date, we can do that later.
Okay. 2536. So we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 2536.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2536 directs Department of Education to develop professional development courses related to guidance and counseling programs for students in kindergarten through grade 12, appropriates $250,000 out of the general fund beginning July 1st. It was previously heard on February 8th. There is a dash one amendment which moves the appropriation of $250,000 out of the general fund. There's a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means, and the revenue impact statement is no impact, and the fiscal impact statement has been issued.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the dash one amendment.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves to move adopt the dash one amendment. Is there any discussion? Okay.
That was just a dollar amount, right?
Correct.
Yes. Yes. Any other discussion? Okay. With that, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 2536 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay. Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 2536 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that it be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Parrish.
Thanks. So I didn't hear in the testimony. I want to double check again. Is this a one-time appropriation or if it's we need $250,000 ongoing maintenance to maintain the curriculum? I'm going to vote yes for the bill. Let us hash that out down on Ways and Means. But I do want to, again, be cautious that as we make these types of asks that we are, you know, we get some sense in the hearings of whether or not it's just a single appropriation or if there's going to be a maintenance of effort in a subsequent biennia. And
well, from what I understand, the dollar amount was part of the amendment that was taken out.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I don't know what Ways and Means are going to do, but Thea, do you have more information?
Yeah, if you look at our Chair Doherty, members of the committee, if you look at the fiscal statement, it says the bill as amended has a blank general fund appropriation clause to ODE for the 2017-2019 biennium because the $250,000 was removed. So it's blank.
It's blank, but do we know what we think it's going to actually cost to?
Yes, there is a statement in the fiscal impact.
Okay.
It says a one-time cost, $25,000 general fund in the next biennium, but the cost for electronically providing professional development courses through the Canvas system is currently $3.75 per user. If the course is utilized by at least one person per public school, the cost estimate would be $9,383 per biennium, but this estimate is likely based on the minimum utilization of the training. However, the bill does not mandate that school districts utilize this training material, nor does it provide any restrictions on the qualifications for the individuals which may take this course. Therefore, complete cost estimates associated with the online courses are indeterminate.
Okay. Thanks. That answered my question.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Solomon.
I just wanted to make a comment that I'm excited about the opportunity that that school districts that are especially in our rural districts are going to have access to this this type of training. And so I just wanted to voice my support.
Representative Vile.
Again, I don't know how anybody can meaningfully badmouth the idea. But I have the fiscal concern that, for the record, I just want to make clear.
Okay. Thank you. Any other discussion? Okay. With that, Matt, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Aye.
Representative McClain.
Aye.
Representative Parrott.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Sprenger.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes and the bill is sent to, as amended, to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means. With that, I close the work session on House Bill 2536. And I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2845. And remember, this is an extension of what we had the other day. And just, we didn't have any time for questions, so this is our time to answer questions of the carrier and the proponent and anybody else who is here. And if we can introduce the bill, just to remind our
what we're talking about.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2845 requires Department of Education to convene an advisory committee consisting of 14 members to develop statewide ethnic study standards for adoption into existing statewide social studies standards for grades K through 12, and it requires the advisory committee to provide list of suggested materials, resources, sample curricula, and pedagogical skills training.
Okay, so Representative Hernandez is here. Do we have any questions? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, and I appreciate that Representative Hernandez and I had a discussion outside of the building after, outside of the hearing room after this hearing, but appreciate you, Chair, opening this up again. So I'm a sponsor of the bill. I support the concept behind the bill, and I want to just sort of get on the record that one of the things that I'd like to see happen is that we actually add one more person to the mix if we're going to sort of break out, you know, somebody from Commission on Women and somebody from a commission on all the different commissions we have. We don't actually have a Middle Eastern commission, and I'd like to see us add to the mix somebody who is maybe from one of our universities, somebody who has some background in Middle Eastern studies. You know, my own children have grown up sort of not knowing which box to check. I never knew which box to check. Do you check white or do you check other? Because there's not sort of a line for, you know, Arab on any of the things that I fill out. So I think that's really important. And I also think it's important to understand that there's things that bring the Middle East together in common, and there are things that also separate it greatly. My own kids have only ever grown up knowing that we're at war with the Middle East. And so I think that context is really important. And I know that we're looking at a potential amendment to describe that a little better and maybe cover the fact that the Middle East is actually people of, you know, I know this is not specifically faith-based, but that it is, you know, you've got folks who are from the Jewish faith, the Christian faith, the Muslim faith, and they don't all necessarily gel together as the Middle East, and we want to try to reflect that as part of ethnic studies.
Madam Chair, Representative Parrish, yes, I am working with your office and another lobbyist to figure out what the goals are and figure out language to meet those goals as an amendment to this bill.
I appreciate that.
Thank you. Representative Fair. Did you have your hand up?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hernandez, I wanted to ask you about a couple of things here. The catch line describes this as an ethnic study bill. But yet we see social minorities in here as well. To me personally, I think it's a large leap between ethnic studies and working social minorities in that process. In composing the bill, could you explain for me why that you have put both of those into one bill? It would be a rather easy sale in my district to look at a bill that is about ethnic minorities and attempts to do the things that this bill does. I think it's noble, and I think that's good. But it is a much larger barrier to cross when you put in the mix social minority status as well. Could you take a minute to explain to me why those are in the same bill?
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, that's a great question. Ethnic studies is actually an interdisciplinary study that is recognized in the higher education world. And I'm going to read to you the National Association of Ethnic Studies definition of what that means. Ethnic studies in the United States is an interdisciplinary study of difference, chiefly race, ethnicity, and nation, but also sexuality, gender, and other such markings and power as expression by the state, by civil society, and by individuals. When you think about social studies, you think about everything that makes up a society and the social norms in which hold that structure together. And those social norms are dependent upon many different factors, including race, ethnicity, gender, sexuality, and other identity markers. I think for us it's relevant to have an interdisciplinary approach that includes that type of analysis.
So then that interdisciplinary course would also would include, as a matter of course, children K through 12.
So, I think, Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, I think your question may become: how do you incorporate a standard into K through 12? Is that correct?
If in fact we're talking about, Madam Chair, an interdisciplinary study, and we're talking to include the things that you have enunciated here, then when we superimpose that upon the bill itself, realizing that the bill is calling for this course of study to be appropriate for grades K through 12, I'm just seeking to ask if that's what it does.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, what it would do, it would convene a group of stakeholders and experts to come up with standards K through 12, which are broad goals. Right now, you could Google Social Studies Standards Oregon and find our 2011 social studies, and you'll see the framework broken up by major goals and K through 12 goals. I call them goals, but they're standards. And you will see we have different categories like geography, history, and I believe six others. So to answer your question, whatever this advisory group of stakeholders recommends as the, you'll see broad standards for teachers to meet those standards in terms of, or school districts actually, to meet those standards in terms of the curriculum and pedagogy that they provide to their school.
Then if I might follow up, then when we refer to, as it states in the bill, ethnic studies and working the social minorities in there too, this group would be coming up with something that would be taught to grades K through 12.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. And then just one final one here. And thank you for your patience here. Wanted to ask about a particular line on page 2 of the bill, lines 16 and 17. And if I can read this, it says, promote critical thinking regarding the interaction between systemic social structures and ethnic minority or social minority status. I think the question that I have for you here is, what is a systemic social structure? And how does that phrase play into the sentence? This is to promote critical thinking regarding the interaction between systemic social structures and ethnic minority or social minority status. For the purpose of definition here, what is a systemic social structure?
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, if you look at line 10, you'll see what it's breaking down to. It says, develop ethnic study standards to the purpose for adoption into existing statewide social study standards for public school students in kindergarten through grade 12, that, and you'll see A, B, C, and you just read C. And you're asking for the definition of what systemic social structures mean.
Right.
As somebody who has 2 degrees in social sciences, undergrad and graduate, I can define it myself and somebody who has a bachelor's degree in ethnic studies, but I would, if you would like us to find a textbook definition, we could also provide that, but I'm going to try to attempt to answer your question.
Well, thank you.
For line 16, systemic social structures are pretty much the overall encompassing view of what regulates society. What is the thing that the largest structure, if you will, the macro scope of social
conditions and norms that perpetuate how society operates. For example, if you look at, you know, you've probably heard the word structural racism, and you've probably heard of micro-racial aggressions. When you talk about structural forms of oppression or racism, you're looking at, for example, if you look at the United States Department of Education, and then you look at the overall statistics that come from that department and the inequities and disparities that exist within those statistics, what that tends, basically it's that large of a systemic and institutional structural problem, if you will, mm-hmm. around the country when it comes to academic achievement gaps that exist in our society. It could also, not only can it be like a government agency, it could also be private sector outcomes. It could also be how society operates in a social function, if you will. For example, we could look at homophobia and how that operates, not only in a micro level, but this attempts to talk, how do you start to understand how it functions at a structural, systemic level, and what systems perpetuate that structural norm. I mean, I can talk about this for days because this is what I studied. I'm not sure if I'm making any sense to you.
Yeah, you're doing fine. So the statewide social studies standards will include the topics like you're speaking of.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, it depends on what the professionals do or the stakeholders do who will bring in professionals. I think what it we already study that. When you study history and geography other social studies, you already get different forms of perspectives, including structural. I think what this does, it outlines here specifically to achieve what I said in line 10 in more detail.
Thank you. And just one final, mm-hmm. if I might. What is the status, in your opinion, today of social studies as currently taught? Now, by bringing this bill forward, I would assume that your concern is that it's just not cutting it and it's not getting us to where we really are.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chair Wilson, that's a great question, and I'll speak to my own opinion and individual thought of why I work with a group of organizations in which, if you look back to old lists from last week, you will see that list of over 60 organizations that have endorsed this. The reason why I wanted to work on this is I believe that there is a lot of rich history in our country that incorporates and has hidden figures and missing pages of people from different ethnicities and different identities who aren't in current curriculum, and none of our goals push us to include those stories that have happened throughout our society. And the reason why I care about this is because when you try to deal with the question of why do we have so many unengaged folks, why do we have the educational achievement gap that we have, why do we have high absenteeism rate, low graduation rate, and then if we desegregate that data, why do we find that there are many racial disparities and disparities amongst other social minorities when it comes to those outcomes? So to try to answer that huge, what I would use, systemic problem that exists in our society, you find solutions all throughout to try to solve those. This is just one solution that tries to solve the larger question of how do you close those achievement gaps, and that is how do you find how do you see yourself incorporated into a country in which you're growing up in? How do you see people that look like you throughout history? How do you see that you actually matter and you contributed or your ancestors contributed to the fabric of this nation? How do you also learn the critical studies of history in a way that racism and sexism and all these other forms of oppression has existed in our society that have produced these systemic types of outcomes so that we can start to break them and understand them. Those are my reasoning behind supporting this bill. Another one is you all may remember or may not, in almost before summer, students started to walk out throughout the state because of racism that occurred in their schools. And it started off at Forest Grove High School and then went on to several other high schools where they did walkouts, particularly majority students of color who experienced not only individual forms of racism but institutional forms of racism and wanted to do something about it. And those folks were at the table asking us to figure out ways to find solutions for why there's such a lack of comprehension or lack of empathy or understanding of why we're different and why we actually do belong in this country and why we're not, you know, foreigners, but that we have a rich history in this country since before the founding. And I'm going to stop there because I can talk to you about this for hours. This is my work as a former educator. I made sure to incorporate amazing history of indigenous people, black people, native and or Asian and Arab and Latino and Chicano into the curriculum, including the history of gender and sexuality in this country as well.
Yeah. As you recall from our conversations, I have not one issue in the world in your discussion about the racial issue and the racial component. I agree with you on that, and I'm fine with you on that. It's just that I just see it as a conflation, adding racial minorities with social minority. So, thank you.
And just as a sideline, as somebody who dealt, when I was a teacher, I was on the social studies curriculum where we went through and every 5-10 years or whatever we go through and revamp it. And it's like everything you deal with social issues, social studies issues that have emerged in the past 5 or 10 years. So in other words, you know, women's studies weren't something. The idea of the peace movement was not in the curriculum in 1960, but it was definitely in the curriculum in 1970. And so it's something that's always evolving, depending on how society is evolving or not. So anyway, Representative Violet, Representative Parrish.
Representative Hernandez, I want to also reflect admiration and gratitude for the clear passion that you bring to this, and the amount of knowledge, frankly, is astounding to me. I had an experience yesterday, though, relative to this bill. I've got a bunch of kids and a bunch of grandkids, and they're all different colors, from very dark, which would probably identify as black because their mother is black, to blonde, whiter than I children. And in a birthday party with about 20 of those children, I began to talk about this bill and ask them what they thought about how this might work in their school. The ones that were younger than about 14 could not figure it out. Mm-hmm. They were really struggling because they did not see that there was any value in talking about differences. And even the 6, 7, 8-year-olds were like, why would we do that? Why do we want to talk about differences? It's the K through 12 piece of this that's got me a little bit troubled. And I wonder if we really need to reach down to a kindergartner or even a fourth grader when it appears that they're doing a whole lot better than we are as adults in accepting one another and start drawing differences there.
J- Chair Doherty.
I want to answer that briefly.
I'll try to answer that briefly.
I'll try, you will. Thank you.
I mean, and Representative Vile, I was just about to deconstruct that whole question and go into the historical analysis of it and the social analysis of it, but we don't have enough time, I would say this. Regardless of whether we want to talk about difference, that difference still exists. And the notion that we cannot talk about it only perpetuates what we currently have. And that perpetuation is producing the outcomes in which we see. And those outcomes vary, not only on the academic component, but also on the social and emotional, cognitive state of people. So what actually ends up happening in our society is a lot of these young people grow up without seeing themselves reflected in the history of this nation, but also in the pedagogy of every type of discipline that is taught or learned in K through 12. And the consequences of those are that these folks have what's called, and there's a lot of research to prove this, actually you could probably get a master's and doctorates on this, internalized racism and forms of oppression. And what this does, you've probably watched these videos where these young children, babies, looking at dolls, and they point at which one's the bad one, and they point at the one that's dark skin, and they point at which one's the good one, they point at the ones that is light skin. That's just the reality of our society to this day. And I think folks, I believe in a country where folks can feel pride in who they are, where they come from, their rich ancestry, their history, and I believe that that should be taught in a way that is reflective of what actually happened in the United States. And those who have fought for us to have the rights that we do, the civil rights that we do, and to try to summarize it, these are goals. These are equity goals that we're going to set so that when we're thinking about teaching and having curriculum, we're thinking a little bit more complex to what our society actually needs to meet the demands of current students. And I rather have critically minded, thoughtful people than folks who may not want to look at certain identity factors. Anyway, I hope that, you know, if you want to talk to me about this, I have thousands of research articles I can send to you on this.
We have two more questions.
Two more questions?
Yeah, so.
All right, Chair Doherty.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Parrish?
Well, mine's actually more of a comment. I want to just address, you know, Vice Chair Wilson, on line 16, that notion about systemic social structures, I'm actually excited about having that conversation from a right-leaning perspective, because I also include, and Representative Hernandez may or may not agree with me, but I include things like how school funding moves to kids and schools where there's high populations of kids of color, and maybe every dime that we're allocating from the legislature isn't reaching that school. I consider that a systemic social structure problem. When we have things like even in the teacher tenure system, where maybe some of your best and brightest teachers are not teaching in those schools, I consider that a systemic social structure challenge that we should be having a conversation about. When the Department of Education comes and puts up a screen in our Ways and Means Subcommittee the other day that says that they're excited that we've got 29% of kids of color reading by third grade when the rest of them are at 48% students across the board, and we actually parse that out as a separate line item, I think that is a systemic social structure issue that needs to be addressed, because I think all kids should be reading by third grade. So, and we shouldn't be having to parse them out individually. And so I think that, to me, that line 16 is an opportunity for some of the things I value as where I think there are systemic social problems around education, for us to get into the weeds and actually start to dissect those things, and then maybe come up with some better policies that address them. But and we can have a healthy debate about whether people agree with that or not, but that's how I view that line and why I support that language.
Okay, thank you. Representative McClain.
I just want to make a brief statement, too, and this was to Representative Vile and to Representative Hernandez. I just spent Saturday at Forest Grove High School with students of color and talking and dealing with them, and they got to tell their stories. And many of their stories started in second grade. So
far as how they either felt like there was necessary conversation that they wanted to have in school because they were confused or they felt like they weren't seeing, you know, themselves in some of the heroes. They weren't seeing it in some of the history. And they were talking about why it would have been so much easier if they had dealt with it early, but they had had problems because it hadn't been dealt in second, third, fourth, fifth grade in different ways, and each story was different. But I just wanted to thank the thoughtful conversation that we're having at the dais, as well as the thoughtful presentation that Representative Hernandez has made today, because I think that everything I've heard, you know, signals to me that we all understand what this particular bill could do in a variety of ways for a majority of our students in our schools in the state of Oregon. So thank you so much.
Any other questions?
Okay, so with that, we close the public hearing on House Bill 2845, and we're going to be standing at ease for about a minute and a half.
No, you were just at ease.
Okay, we're just at ease, so we're coming. Wait, we got to pull the microphones off. Okay. Things first of all, I would like to recognize Representative McLean.
Madam Chair, I serve notice of possible reconsideration for House Bill 2529.
Okay. Representative McLean serves possible notice of reconsideration, and we will be dealing with this at Wednesday's meeting.
Thank you very much.
And then also to give Rep. Reardon the time to amend House Bill 2530 and have the amendment written, we will hear that bill on Monday, March 27th. Okay. Any other...
Yeah, I guess the question I would have is, what are we hoping to accomplish by this?
By what?
By the reconsideration.
Having any questions that could be answered by Rep. Reardon to the person that person, people or person who voted no.
Okay.
There it is. Okay, anything else? Okay, with that, I adjourn the House Committee on Education. Okay, with that, I adjourn the House Committee on Education.